Luminous hands on his black Navy SEAL watch ticked past 7 a.m. Condor stalked back the way he'd come, as if retracing geography would let him remake time, go back to when and do it right. When he got to the stacks where he'd been lost before, down the gap between two book-packed rows, he spotted a mouse named Stuart driving a tiny motor car away in search of the north that would lead him to true love. Condor whispered, "Good luck, man." "Voice behind you." "Aye." Whirl hands up and out, sensing guard, stacks spinning. Woman brown clothes, eyes widening. Fran, sputtering,
"I was just going to say, are you talking to yourself?"
Condor let his arms float down as he faded out of combat stance. "Something like that."
"Sorry to have interrupted."
She smiled like a woman at a Methodist church social his mother once took him to, or like the shaved-head, maroon-robed Buddhist nun he'd seen in Saigon after that city changed its name.
"But nice to see you."
Condor frowned.
"Wherever I go, there you are."
"Oh, my goodness,"
twittered Fran.
"Doesn't that just seem so? And good for you being here now. The early bird gets the worm. Believe you me, there are worms. Worms everywhere."
Flick. A flick of motion. Something. Somebody ducking back behind a shelf in an aisle between those stacks way down where Stuart drove.
"By the way,"
he heard Fran say,
"good job. The DOSP will be pleased."
"What?"
"Your first clearance transfer."
"How did you know I was sending out a load of coffins?"
Her smile widened.
"Must have been Jeremy."
Amidst the canyons of shelves crammed with books, Condor strained to hear creeping feet beyond the twittering brown bird of a woman.
"Just walking by his shop in the basement. Door must have been open. I mean, I used to have your job working with him."
Prickling skin. Something, someone, hidden from their eyes in the canyons of stacks, moved the air.
"Then are you feeling okay?"
"Just distracted."
"Ah."
Fran marched away, exited through a door alone.
Alone.
Condor telepathed to whoever hid in this cavern of canyons made by rows of shelved books.
"Just you and me now, all alone."
Somewhere waited a knife. Walk between close walls of bookshelves crammed with volumes of transcribed RAF radio transmissions, 1939 to 1941. He could hear the call signs, airmen's chatter, planes throbbing engines, bombs, and the clattering machine guns of yesterday.
"Today is what you got, and what's got you."
What got him, he never knew. A sound, a tingling, a corner of his eye motion, whatever. He whirled left to that wall of shelved books, slammed his palms against half a dozen volumes so they shot back off their shelf, and knocked away the books shelved in the next aisle. A gap blasted in walls of books through which he saw, mustached and eyes startled wide, Rich Bechtel.
"Oops," yelled Condor. "Guess I stumbled again."
He flowed around the shelf. A combat ballet swooped into the aisle where Rich, suit, tie, mustache, stood by a jumble of pushed-to-the-floor books. Condor smiled.
"Surprised to see me here?"
"Surprised? Why?"
"Yes, why are you here?"
The mustached man shrugged.
"It's a cut-through to get good coffee."
"Did you cut through past the balcony of the reading room?"
"Well, sure, that's a door you can take."
"So why were you hiding back here?"
said Condor. Rich shrugged.
"I was avoiding Call Me Fran."
Confessions without challenge.
"As if we were friends," thought Condor.
"A while back," continued Rich, "I was over here in Adams working on a congressional study of public policy management approaches. One of the books I had on my desk was a rare early translation of the Tao Te Ching, you know, the..."
"The Chinese Machiavelli."
"More than that, but yes, a How Power Works manual that Ronald Reagan quoted. Fran mistook it for something like the Quran. She walked by my research desk, spotted the title, and went off on me about how dare I foster such thought. Things got out of hand. She might have pushed my books off the desk. Could have been an accident, but..."
But what?
I walked away. When I see her now, I keep walking. I try not to be seen.
Condor said, nobody could make up that story. The caught man frowned.
Why would I make up any story?
We all make up stories, and sometimes we put real people in the stories in our heads. That can be confusing.
I'm already confused enough, Rich laughed. What are you doing?
Leaving. Which way are you headed?
Rich pointed the way Condor'd come, left with a wave and a smile.
The chug, chug, chug of a train.
One aisle over, between walls of books, railroad tracks ran through a lush green somewhere east of Eden. Steel rails under a coming-this-way freight train and sitting huddled on top of one metal car rode troubled James Dean. Condor left that cavern of stacks, walked to the gallery where he could see the empty researcher's desk on the floor of the reading room below, checked his watch, hoped he wouldn't need to pee. Some surveillances mean no milk cartons.
What does it mean when you smell almonds?
Don't think about that. Fade into the stacks. Be part of what people never notice. On schedule, Kim, with her silver lip loop and a woman wearing a boring professional suit, walked into the reading room. The roommate left. Kim settled at her desk. He gave the counter-surveillance 20 more minutes, went to his office. No coffins waited outside against the yellow wall from a delivery by Jeremy.
Watch for that.
So Condor left his office door open, sank into his desk chair.
Footsteps.
Outside the open door in the hall, hard shoes on the concrete floor of the yellow underground tunnel. Footsteps clacking louder as they came closer, closer. She glides past his open door in three firm strides, strong legs and a royal blue coat. Silver-lined, dyed blonde hair floats on her shoulders, lush mouth, high cheekbones. Cosmic gravity pulls his bones and then she's gone, her click, click, click of high heels turning the basement corner, maybe to the elevator or out for mid-morning coffee.
Don't write some random wondrous woman into your story. Don't be a stalker.
But he wasn't, wouldn't. He only looked, ached to look more, had no time to think about her, about how maybe her name was Lulu, how maybe she wore musk.
Almonds.
Up from behind his desk, out the lock-lit door and gone. Up the stairs, two at a time, past the guards on the door to outside, in the street, dialing that number with the CIA cell phone. A neutral voice answered, waltzed Condor to the hang-up. He made it into his blue townhouse, stared at his closed turquoise door for 19 minutes until that soft knock. Opened his door to three bullet-eyed jacket men. Emma showed up an hour later, dismissed them. Sat on a chair across from where Condor slumped on the couch. Said,
"What did you do?"
"I called the cops," answered the silver-haired man who was her responsibility.
"Your old CIA panic line number, because you say you found C4 plastic explosives, but you don't know where. You just smelled it, the almond smell."
"In the Library of Congress."
"That's a lot of where, and C4 is not as popular as it used to be."
"Still works. Big time boom. Hell of a kill zone."
"If you know how to get it or make it, and what you're doing."
"You ever hear of this thing called the Internet?"
She threw him a change-up.
"Tell me about the dirty books."
"You know everything I know because I told those jacket men they told you. Sounds crazy, right? And since I'm crazy, that's just about right. Or am I wrong?"
Emma watched his face.
"They aren't going to do anything, are they? CIA, Homeland Security."
"Oh, they're going to do something," said Emma. "No more level 5. They're going to monitor you level 3. Increase your surprise random home visits. Watch me watching you in case I mess up and go soft, and don't recommend a recommit in time to avoid any embarrassments."
"How did you keep them from taking me away now?"
"I told them you might have imbibed early and contraindicated with your meds.
imbibed.
Tomorrow's St. Patrick's Day.
She shook her head.
I believe you believe. But you're trying to be who you were then, and that guy's gone into who you are now.
Vin, he said, not Condor.
Both, but in the right perspective.
Ah, said Condor. Perspective.
What's yours? You've been free for a while now. How is it out here?
Full of answers and afraid of questions. She softened.
How are the hallucinations?
They don't interfere with...
With you functioning in the real world?
The real world. He smiled. I'll watch for it. What about Kim's stalker?
If there's a stalker, you're right. She should call the cops.
Yeah, just like I did. That'll solve everything.
This is what we got,
said Emma. One more thing we got, said Vin. At work, I can't take it, packing coffins.
Is it your back?
Said Emma.
Do you need?
I need more carts to go to preserve. I need to be able to save more books. Emma probed. Therapist? Monitor? Maybe, friend.
Those aren't just books to you, the ones at work. The novels.
Condor shrugged. Short stories, too.
There are things going to the end they would go to without you. You act like you're a Nazi working a book-burning bonfire. You're not. Why do you care so much?
We sell our souls to the stories we know, said Condor. The more kinds of stories, the bigger we are. The better or truer or cooler the story. His shrug played out the logic in her skull.
I'll see what I can do,
said Emma.
About the cart.
Carts, corrected Condor.
Only if we're lucky.
She walked out of his rented house, left him sitting there, alone. Sometimes you gotta do what you do just to be you. Next morning, he dressed for war. Black shoes good for running, loose black jeans not likely to bind a kick. His Oxford blue shirt might rip if grabbed. He ditched the Dustmaster's sports coat for the black leather zip-up jacket he bought back when an ex-CIA cocaine cowboy shot him in Kentucky. The black leather jacket let him move, plus it gave the illusion of protection from a slashing knife or exploding bomb. Besides, he thought when he saw his rock and roll reflection walking in the glass of the Adams building door, if I'm going down looking like me. 7 pinewood crates waited, stacked against the yellow wall outside his cave. Condor caressed the coffins like a vampire, inhaled their essence, lifted their lids to reveal their big box of empty. Smooth walls, carpentered bottoms of reinforcing slats making a bed of rectangular grooves for books to lie on and die. His face hovered each of those 7 empty coffins, but only in one caught a whiff of almonds. He tore through his office. The computer said 9 coffins waited outside against his wall. Desk drawers, still empty. No weapons. The DOSP's fountain pen filled his eyes. Use what you got. He stuck the pen in his black leather jacket. 2 women working a table outside the Adams Building reading room spotted a silver-haired man coming their way. They wore green sweaters. The younger one's left cheek sported a painted-on green shamrock. She smiled herself into Condor's path.
Happy St. Patrick's Day! You need some holiday green. Want to donate a dollar to the library and get a shamrock tattoo? Good luck and keeps you from getting pinched. How about one on your hand? Unless you want to go wild. Cheek or...
The silver-haired stranger pressed his trigger finger to the middle of his forehead.
Oh, cool, like a third eye.
Or a bullet hole. Her smile wilted. He stalked into the reading room. Clerks behind the counter, scholars at research desks. There, at her usual place, sat Kim. She kept her cool, kept her eyes on an old book, kept her cell phone visible on her desk, an easy grab and a no-contact-necessary signal. He kept a casual distance between where he walked and where she sat, headed to the bottom of a spiral staircase.
Playing the old man let him take his time climbing those silver steel steps, a spiraling ascent that turned him through circles to the sky. His first curve toward the reading room let him surveil the head tops of strangers, any of whom could be the Oppo. The stairs curved him toward the rear wall that disappeared into a black-and-white Alabama night where a 6-year-old girl in a small town street turns to look back at her family home as a voice calls,
"Scout?"
Condor's steel stairs path to the sky curved. Fran. Standing on the far side of the reading room, Condor felt the crush of her fingers gripping the push handle of a blue smock-covered cart, saw her burning face, as she raged across the room at silver lip-ringed Kim.
"You know crazy when you see it, when crazy keeps being where crazy happened.
Obsession. Call it lust that Fran dared not name. Call it fearful loathing of all that. Call it outrage at Kim's silver lip loop and how Kim represented an effrontery to the way things are supposed to be. Call it envy or anger because that damn still young woman with soft curves Fran would never be asked to touch got to do things Fran never did, or could, or would. Got to feel things, have things, be things. Lust, envy, hate. Complications beyond calculation fused into raging obsession and made Fran not a twittering brown bird, made her a jackal drooling for flesh and blood. For Kim. Kim sat at her desk between where Fran seethed and where Condor stood on spiral silver stairs to the sky. Kim turned a page in her book. Fran's eyes flicked from her obsession. Spotted Vin. Saw him see the real her. Snarled, whirled the cart around and drove hard toward the reading room's main doors.
"Cut her off. You got nothing. She's got a knife."
Condor clattered down the spiral steel stairs, hurried across the reading room. He had no proof, no justifiable right to scream, "Halt!" or call the cops. And any cops would trigger jacket men to snatch him away to the secret main hospital's padded cell or to that suburban Virginia crematorium where no honest soul would see or smell his smoke swirling away into the night sky. He caught his breath at Kim's desk.
"Not a mustache. A her."
Kim looked to the main door where he'd pointed, but all she saw beyond Vin charging there was the shape of someone pushing a cart into the elevator. Vin ran to the elevator, saw its glowing arrow, down. Over there, raced down those stairs, hit the basement level. He heard rolling wheels from around that corner. Rammed at Condor came the blue-smocked cart that he caught with both hands, pulled more, jerked Fran off balance, pushed the book cart harder than he'd ever pushed the blocking sled in high school football, slammed her spine against a yellow cinder block wall, pinned her there.
Stalker had a knife, and a woman like Fran with knife-tipped shoes once almost killed James Bond.
Condor yelled,
"Why, Kim?"
"She doesn't get to be her. Me should be her. Have her stop her."
The fought-over cart shook between them. Its covering blue smock lid slid off. Books tumbled off the cart. Books summoned from Heartland libraries to our biggest cultural repository where they disappeared on official business. Condor registered a dozen versions of the same title banned in high schools across America because...
"You filled the coffins, tricked libraries all over the country into sending their copies of certain titles here to the mothership of libraries. You murdered those books."
Condor twisted the cart to keep Fran rammed against the wall.
"You're a purger, too."
"Books put filth in people's heads. Ideas."
"Our heads can have any ideas they want."
"Not in my world."
Fran twisted and leveraged the cart up and out from under Condor's push. The cart crashed on its side. He flopped off his feet, fell over it. Wild punches hit him, and he whirled to his feet, knocking her away. Yelled,
"Where are the coffins? Where's the C4?
"I see you,"
she yelled as the book she threw hit his nose.
Pain flash. He sensed her kick, closed his thighs, but her shoe still slammed his groin. He staggered, hit the stone wall, hands snapping up to thwart her attack. That didn't come. Gone. Jackal Fran was gone, running down the basement tunnel.
Cell phone. Pull out your cell phone.
Kim,
he gasped to the woman who answered his call.
Watch out. Woman my age, Fran, and she's not a brown bird. She's the jackal after you. Don't talk. Reading room, right? Stay in plain sight, but get to the checkout counter. Yes, the library computer. Search employee database. No, not Fran anybody. Search for Jeremy somebody.
A ghost of Fran whispered,
I used to have your job working with him.
Over the phone came intel, an office/shop door number, some castle hole. The DOSP's pen tattooed that number on the back of his left hand. He hung up and staggered through the underground tunnel, scanned the numbers on the closed doors, looking for numbers with an SB prefix, whatever that.
Sub-basement, like my office.
One more level down. At a stairwell, he flipped open his ancient phone and dialed another number.
Rich, it's Vin. You gotta help somebody right now. Protect her. Tell her I sent you. In Adam's reading room, named Kim, silver lip loop. I thought you'd noticed her. And that's all right, you just... Okay, but when you couldn't find the right words, you walked on, right? Go now. Don't worry, nobody knows everything. Play it with what you've got.
He jogged through yellow tunnels like he was a rat running a maze.
I'm too old for this.
Staggering to a closed brown metal door, its top half fogged glass. Condor caught his breath outside that door. The door handle wouldn't turn. He saw a doorbell, trigger-fingered its button, heard it buzz. The click of a magnetic lock. The door swings open.
Come on in.
Jeremy stands 10 steps into this underground lair beside a workbench and holding a remote control wand. The door slams shut behind Condor.
What do you want?
Said a caretaker of this government castle. Caretaker, like in the novel Fran tried to murder, some story about sex and an insane asylum and who was crazy.
Stick to what's sane,
Condor said.
The coffins.
They're here already?
Scan the workshop.
No sign of the two missing coffins. A refrigerator, wall sink, trash tub of empty plastic water bottles. The back of an open laptop faced Condor from the workbench where the tech wizard of the cave stood. Jeremy tossed the remote control beside an iPhone cabled to the laptop.
Oh, said Jeremy. You meant the crates for the books.
He took a step closer.
Why do you care?
There's something you don't know you know.
I know enough.
Off to Jeremy's left waited the clear plastic roller tub holding half a dozen cell phones and its color printer sign proclaiming, Old Telephones for Charity.
One heartbeat.
Two.
I didn't know you were the one collecting charity phones.
What do you know?
Jeremy eased another step closer.
Sometimes crazy is the way to go.
Jeremy's blue eyes narrowed. His hands were fists.
Feel the vibe. See the movie.
Sunny blue sky behind the white dome of the U.S. Capitol. Across the street rises a castle with a green metal top and giant gray concrete walls of columns and grand staircases, windows behind which people work. A fountain out front where bronze-green statues of Greek gods flirt and pose their indomitable will.
Tremble, rumble.
The Library of Congress's Jefferson Building shudders, sprays out exploded concrete dust like 9/11, like Oklahoma City. Fireballs nova through castle rooms of wood panels, wood shelves, books that no one would see again. Those walls crumble to rubble. The last moment of the castle's cohesion is a cacophony of screams.
You'll never make it to the door. Locked anyway. And he's between you and its remote control on the workbench by the computer umbilical corded to an ultraphone.
Make it real.
You and Fran.
She's just a woman, said Jeremy. More useful than a donkey, not as trainable. Like, deluded.
Like all women in this Babylon where they don't know their place.
Oh, I like all the places they will go, said Condor, quoting the book he'd heard read a million billion times to a frightened child traveling beside his mother on a bus through a dark Texas night.
Where'd Fran take those two coffins? Crates that you and her used to smuggle in C4.
Somewhere for her stupid crusade?
For her stupid crusade, not our. A lot of roads run through Crazy Town.
Jeremy took a step closer. Condor flowed to walk a martial arts bagua circle around him. Almonds, a strong whiff in the air of what had been stockpiled down here.
She even bribed you,
guessed Condor as Jeremy turned to keep the silver-haired man from circling behind him.
She funded the will of God.
Fran thought the only God she was funding was hers. Didn't know about yours.
My God is the only God.
That's what all you people say.
Why is there a floppy, flat, empty red rubber water bottle on the floor?
Condor fainted. Jeremy flinched. He's a puncher, maybe from a shopping mall dojo or hours watching YouTubes of jihad stars showing their wannabe homegrown brothers out there the throat-cutting ways of holy warriors.
Slats, said Condor. On the inside bottom of the crates, reinforcing slats, they make a narrow trough. Somewhere outside, after you dump the books, you mold C4 into those slats. Cream color. Looks like glue on the wood if the guard outside checks. Odds are the guard won't check all the crates every time. You only use two, and even if somebody checks, nobody notices. Fran paid you to cut her out a couple crates before you delivered them. That gave you time with the crates in here to peel out what you hid, pass them on to her. She gives them back full of what you don't care about to fold back into the coffin count.
Way to go, cowboy. Jeremy had that flat accent born in Ohio near the river. You get to witness the destruction of the great Satan's temple of heretical thought.
Wow, did they email you a script?
You think I'd be so careless as to let the NSA catch me contacting my true brothers in the Middle East before I proved myself?
Lunge.
Jeremy lunged and the Condor whirled left, whirled right. Snake struck in a 3-beat singy counter charge to... Pepper spray burned Condor's face.
Breathe. Can't breathe. Eyes on fire.
The holy warrior slammed his other fist into the silver-haired man's guts. Condor was already gasping for air and flooding tears because of pepper spray. The barbell-muscled punch buckled and bent him over, knocked him toward the workbench, teetering, stumbling, crashing to the floor.
Get up. Get up. Get to your knees.
The blue-eyed fanatic slapped Vin, a blow more for disrespect than destruction. Condor saw himself flopping in slow motion, kneeling gasping on the hard floor. His arms waving at his sides couldn't fly him away or fight his killer. White cable connects the laptop to the iPhone. Jeremy rips that cord free, whips its garrote around the kneeling man's neck. Gurgling, clawing at the cord, cutting off blood to brain, air to lungs, pepper-sprayed eyes blurring, a roar, a whooshing in his ears. Can't... Bzzz. That doorbell buzz startles the strangler, loosens his pull. Blood rush to brain. Air... Bzzz. Strangler jerks his garrote tight. Glass rattles as someone outside bangs on that door.
Can't scream... Gagging here, in here, help me, in here, get in here.
Jeremy spun Condor around and slammed him chest first into the workbench.
Hands, your hands on the workbench. Claw at.
7 seconds before blackout,
he saw.
The remote for the door, wobbling on the workbench.
Flop, reach, grab.
The jihad warrior whirled the gurgling apostate away from the high-tech gear.
Thumb the remote.
The door buzzes, springs open.
Fran.
Screaming, charging, rushing in. Jeremy knees Condor, throws him to the floor and the garrote. The garrote goes loose around Condor's neck, but won't unwrap itself from the strangler's hands. Holds his arms trapped low.
Stop it!
Fran screams at the treasonous pawn who's trying to steal her destiny.
He's mine to kill!
Down from heaven stabs her gray metal spring blade knife, confiscated from a tourist, salvaged from storage by an LOC staffer who could steal any of the castle's keys. Fran drove her stolen blade into Jeremy's throat. Gasping, grabbing his hands to his neck, what sticks out of there? Wide-eyed, his hands grab, got her. Weakness percolates up from his feet by the prone Vin, up Jeremy's legs. He's falling, holding on to Fran. Death grips her blouse that rips open as the force of his pull multiplied by his fall jerks her forward. Fran trips over sprawled Condor. Swan dives through the air over the crumpling man she stabbed. Crashes, cracks her skull on the workbench's sharp corner. Spasms, falls flat across the man she stabbed, whose body pins Condor to the floor. Silence. Silence. Crawl out from under the dead. Hands, elbows, and knees pushing on the concrete floor, straining, pulling. Free. Alive. Face down on the floor, gasping scents of cement and dust, sweat and the warm ham and cabbage smell of savaged flesh. A whiff of almonds. Jackhammer in his chest. No heart attack. Not after this. Come on. A little justice. Condor flopped over onto his back. Saw only the castle's flat ceiling. Propped himself up on his elbows. Sat. Dizzy. Sore from punches, getting kneed, strangled. Pepper spray, tears, floor dirt, sweat. His face was caked. Must look like hell. Nobody will let you walk away from this. Almonds. C4. Where's the C4? The workbench, the laptop, glowing screen full of a floor plan. The LOC jewel, the main castle Jefferson building. A pop-up ad flashed over the map, a smiling salesman above a flow of words. Congratulations on your new cell phone basic business plan. Now consider moving beyond mere networked teleconferencing to... The white computer cord garrote lay on the floor like a dead snake. A snake that once connected the laptop computer to an iPhone. An iPhone capable of activating all cell phones on its conferenced network. A for-charity tub that gobbles up donated old cell phones from our better souls. The iPhone screen glowed with the LOC castle map and its user-entered red dots. Dizzy. He staggered toward the wall sink, splashed water on his face, empty plastic water bottles in a tub right by that weird red rubber bag that doesn't belong here. Vision. Jeremy smiling his Ohio smile, walking through the metal detectors with the baggy crotch of his pants hiding a red rubber bottle full of goo that's not water. Grab the roller tub for donated cell phones. Close the laptop. Put it in the tub beside the iPhone. The phone glowed the map of the castle. The crisscrossed corpses on the floor kept still. How long before anyone finds you? Thumb the remote. The door swings open. Push the plastic tub on wheels into the hall. Condor pulled his blue shirt out of his waistband, used it to polish his fingerprints off the remote, then toss it back through the closing door into the basement shop, plastic skidding along the concrete floor to where the dead lay. Go. Race the rumbling plastic tub on wheels through the tunnels of the Adams building to the main castle of Jefferson, down into its bowels and follow the map on the iPhone screen to a mammoth water pipe. Gray duct tape on the inflow water pipe's far side. A cell phone wired as a detonator into a tan, book-sized gob of goo. Boom. And no water for automatic sprinklers to fight fire. Boom. And water floods an American castle. Pull the wires out of the gob of C4. Pull them from the phone. Pull the phone's battery. Toss the dead electronics into the tub. What do you do with a handful of C4? A shot bullet won't set it off, and C4 burns. Only electricity makes it go boom. Squeeze the C4 into a goo ball. Shove it into your black jacket's pocket. Condor charged the plastic tub on wheels to the next map number on the iPhone. Bomb against a concrete weight-bearing wall. The iPhone led him to 3 more bombs. Each time he ripped away the electronics and squeezed the goo into a shape he could hide in his jacket pockets. And when they were full, he stuffed C4 goo inside his underpants. Boom. Run. Catch that elevator. Roll in with the tub. A man and a woman ride with you. He's a gaudy green St. Patrick's Day tie. She looks tired. Neither of them cares about you, about what happens in your crotch if the elevator somehow sparks static electricity. Next floor plan in the iPhone. Stacks. Row after row of wooden shelves and burnable books, and there, under a bookshelf, another cell phone wired goo ball. Rubber bands bind this apparatus to a clear plastic water bottle full of a gray gel that a bomb will burst into a fireball. Lay the bottle of napalm atop the cell phones in the wheeled tub. Your underpants are full. Cinch the rubber bands from that bomb around the ankles of your pants. Feed a snake of C4 down alongside your naked leg in the black jeans. Roll on, oh so slowly. Hours. It takes him hours, slowed more by every load of C4 he stuffs in his pants, inside his blue shirt, in the sleeves of his black leather jacket. Hours. He rolls through the Jefferson Building for hours following iPhone maps made by an obsessed fanatic. Rolls past tours of ordinary citizens, past men and women with lanyard ID. Rumbles down office corridors through the main reading room with its gilded dome ceiling, until the final red X on the last swooped-to page of the iPhone's uploaded maps represents only another pulled-apart bomb. In an office corridor, a door. Men's room. Cradle all the napalm water bottles in your arms. The restroom is bright and mirrored, a storm of lemon ammonia, and empty. Lay screwed open water bottles in the sink so they gluck-gluck down that drain. One bottle won't fit. Shuffle it into the silver metal stall. Can't stop. Exhausted, drained, slide down that stall wall. Slump to sitting on the floor, hugging the toilet like some two beers too many teenager. The C4 padding his body makes it hard to move, but he drains the last non-recyclable water bottle into the toilet. That silver handle pushes down with a whoosh. The world does not explode. He crawled out of the stall, made sure the water bottles in the sink were empty, left them there. Left the tub of cell phones and wires in the hall for janitors to puzzle over. Dumped Jeremy's laptop in a litter barrel. Waddled to an elevator, a hall, down corridors and down the tunnel slope to the Adams Building toward his own office. Kept going. Up, main floor. The blonde went this way. There's the door to the street. You can. Man's voice behind Condor yells,
"You!"
The blue pinstripe suit DOSP, who blinks, leans back from the smell of sweat and some kind of nuts, back from the haggard, wild-eyed man in the black leather jacket.
"Are you quite all right, Mr. Vin?"
"Does that matter?"
says this pitiful excuse for a government employee foisted on the DOSP by another agency, who then unzips his black leather jacket, fumbles inside it, pulls out a fountain pen Vin hands to the DOSP, saying,
"Guess I'm a sword guy."
Vin waddled away from his stricken, silent LOC boss. Stepped out into Twilight Town.
"They'll never let you get away with this."
Capitol Hill sidewalk. Suit and ties with briefcases and work-stuffed backpacks. Kids on scooters. That woman's walking a dog. The cool air promises spring. An umbrella of night cups the marble city. Some guy outside a bar over on Pennsylvania Avenue sings Danny Boy. Budding trees along the curb make a canopy against the street lights' shine,
and just keep going one foot in front of the other. Go slow so nothing shakes out of your clothes. Talking heads blather from an unseen TV. Insist this, know that. Sell whatever. Waves of light dance on that three-story-high townhouse alley wall. Music in the air from the alley courtyard's flowing light. Laughter. Barbecue and green beer inspired the St. Paddy's Day party thrown by the not-yet-30 men and women in that group house. They did their due diligence, reassured their neighbors. Come on over. We're getting a couple of kegs, buckets of ice for Cokes and white wine, craft or foreign beers for palates that had become pickier since college. There was a table for munchies. Texted invites blasted out 4:20 before everybody headed out to the holiday bars after work. Zach rigged his laptop and speakers, played DJ so any woman who wanted a song had to talk to him and his wingman, who was a whiz at voter precinct analysis, but could never read a curl of lipstick. Bodies packed the alley. Everybody worked their look, the cool stance, the way to turn your face to scan the crowd, the right smile. Lots of cheap suits and work ensembles, khakis and sports jackets, jeans that fit better than Condor's bulging pants. Cyber screens glow in the crowd like the stars of a universe centered by whoever holds the cell phone. Hormones and testosterone amidst smoke from the two troughs made from a 50-gallon drum sliced lengthwise by a long-gone tenant of yore. Those two barbecue barrels started out the evening filled with charcoal briquettes and a whoomp of lighter fluid. By the time Condor eased his way to the center of the churning crowd, a couple guys from a townhouse up the street had tossed firewood onto the coals so flames leapt high and danced shadows on the alley courtyard's walls. The crowd surged as Zach turned up the volume on a headbanger song from the wild days of their parents, who were Condor's age. Or younger. Hate that song, he thought. He reached the inner edge of the crowd who, amidst the flickering light, tried not to see the getting there debts pressing down on them, or the pollution from the barrel fires trapping tomorrow's sun. They'd made it here to this city, this place, this idea. They worked for the hero who'd brought them to town. For Congress, of course, that would matter. So would the group. The project, the committee, the caucus, the association, the website they staffed, the administration circus ring that let them parade lions or tigers or bears, oh my, the downtown for dollars firm that pulled levers, the agency or department they powered with their sweat, and so they could, they should, sweat here, now, in the flickering firelight of an alley courtyard. Swaying. Looking, hoping for a connection, heart, mind, flesh, community. Get what you can. If nothing else, a contact, a move toward more. The music surged. An American beat they all knew pulsed this crowd who were white and black, Hispanic and Asian, men and women and maybe more, who came from Purple Mountain's majesty and fruited plains to claim the capital city for this dream or that, to punch a ticket for their career, to get something done or get a deal, to do or to be. That is this city's true question, and they, oh they were the answer now. Near the burning barrels, a dozen couples jumped and jived to their generation's music blaring out of the speakers. Glowing cell phones and green dotted the crowd. Bowlers, top hats. Over there was a woman in green foil boa. That woman blew a noisemaker as she shuffled and danced solo. Not alone, no, she was not alone. Don't anyone dare think that she was alone. She saw him. A guy old enough to be her father, all battered face, lost in space, heard herself yell the question you always ask in Washington.
What do you do?
He felt the heat of the flames.
Hey, old guy,
yelled Zach, DJ earphones cupped around his neck like the hands of a strangler.
This one's for you. My dad loves it.
Zach keyboarded a YouTubed live concert, Bruce Springsteen blasting Badlands. Cranked up the volume as elsewhere in this Empire City night, silver-lip-looped Kim shyly thanked a man with a mustache for being the knight by her side. For dinner, for sure. Coffee at work tomorrow morning, for however much more they might have. But in that alley, in that pounding drums and crashing guitars night, lovers like that became just part of the intensity of it all. Like individual books in the library stacks of stories stretching into our savage forever. Call him Vin. Call him Condor. His arms shot toward the heaven in that black smoked night, and he shuffled to the music's blare, arms waving, feet sliding into the dancing crowd. A roar seized the revelers. A roar that pulled other arms toward heaven, a roar that became the whole crowd bopping with the beat, the hard, driving, invisible anthem.
"Go, old guy!"
shouts someone. A silver-haired frenzy in black leather and jeans rocks through the younger crowd to the burning barrels, to the fire itself, reaches inside his jacket, throws something into those flames, something that lands with a shower of sparks and a sizzle. And crackles. And on he dances, pulling more of that magic fuel out of his jacket, out of its sleeves, out of his, oh my God, he's pulling stuff out of his pants and throwing it on the fire. Every throw makes him lighter, wilder. Then he's dancing hands free in the air, stomping feet with the crowd bouncing around him.
Old guy, old guy.
Cop cruisers cut the night with red and blue spinning orbs. The crowd throbs.
Old guy! Old guy!
Burning almonds and fireplace wood, barbecue and come-hither perfume. A reckless whiff of rebel herb that will become legal and corporate by the decade's end.
Old guy! Old guy!
There are bodies in a basement. Mysteries to be found. Questions clean of his fingerprints. Books to be treasured. There are lovers sharing moments, dreamers dancing in the night, madmen in our marble city. And amidst those who are not his children, through the fog of his crazy, the swirl of his ghosts, the weight of his locked-up years, surging in Condor is the certainty that this, oh, this is the real world.